Welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Do you hear that, Earth? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, the official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron, your number one source for theories, news and discussion, and interviews from the books and the films like me, Rupert Grint. I play Ron Weasley in the Harry Potter films. And now your hosts, Melissa, John and Sue.
Welcome guys. It is Pottercast number 119. We're heading into old age here, and I'm here again. I'm Melissa, I'm here with John and Sue, and we are in for another week of awesome Harry Potter news, series, discussion, analysis, and anything else.
Because Harry you can.
Possibly think of. Because you can. Well, as always, we take this moment to say a special hi from our friends at Borders.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Borders. Haven't read Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows yet for some reason? Don't worry, Borders is here to help. Pick up your copy of this summer's smash hit soon. You won't be able to hide from those spoilers forever. You can count on Borders to have it in stock and ready to take home tonight, along with the audiobook version. Even if you've read the book, the Harry Potter fun doesn't have to end yet. Visit BordersMedia.com or click on the Borders banner at the top of Pottercast page to find out more.
Thank you, John. And now this week in Pottercast 119, we have the introduction of a very new, awesome segment that we probably should have started a few
That's
weeks ago.
Right.
Since we're a Harry Potter podcast. This is Bit by Bit, where we discuss little bits of Deathly Hallows sequentially. So it might be a chapter, it might be a paragraph. This week we have the whole first chapter of Deathly Hallows, but you really can't
split
separate
that,
that out.
No. What if we did a whole bit by bit with like one sentence?
It's possible. All was well. That's a great...
Not my daughter, you bitch.
I demand that that's our last. Oh God, that's going to be like 300 podcasts from now, isn't it?
It'd be awesome.
We also have a very special guest, our first fan guest, our friend Frack, has come to join us for Phoenix Files as well as the Bit by Bit. We don't have a Canon Conundrums this week to make room for our new segment, and we also have another awesome 5 minutes with the girls from the essay project Scribulous at Scribulous.com.
Yes.
And with that, I think it's time that we heard from Sue.
I see dead people in the water, Professor Dumbledore. Yes, we're getting infuriated. The Army of the Dead has been confirmed by David Yates in a new interview that he did.
Oh, gosh.
And this... He called them the Army of the Dead, is how he rephrased it. And he said in Hapless Prince that that segment, he describes it as epic cave scene would be taking place. That's very exciting news, I thought.
I have a feeling that means that they're going to follow them all the way out the cave, hop on their own dead brooms, and chase them back to Hogwarts. They're just going to latch on to that Army of the Dead thing so much. It's going to be crazy.
They are skating. They're skating a really thin line. This could turn into cheesy 80s thriller if they don't do it right. You know? And now it's forever. Yellow eyes, running into the house.
Yeah, it could, but then again, you could also see it, that scene being very intense. When I read that, I was like, that was such a gripping scene, the way it was written. And if they did it, it could be just really powerful, you know? Although... Dan Radcliffe also gave an interview when he talked about him being in a boat with Michael Gambon and how they're looking forward to that. So
totally.
I always have Mr. Gambon in that scene. I don't know.
No, we get powerful Dumbledore in that scene. It'll be good.
Oh, he's going to kick ass with all the fire and everything and the whips of fire. It'll be awesome.
You know, let's just hope he drinks from the thing. I hope they keep it, you know, that way. But in the same interview, David Yates also says that Mr. Cloves has turned in what he calls, quote, a terrific and fun draft that will lend to a very character-driven film.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Why don't you know, Sue?
Well, you know, there are moments of comedy. We've heard Jim Broadbent describe the comedy and Dan Radcliffe talk about the comedy. And there are lots of great deal of comedy in this, but I mean, the last third of the film is not what I would describe as fun, you know? And I worry. I don't know.
I'm not.
I don't know.
I think it's a little early.
Yeah, I suppose it's true because Mr. Yates goes on and talks about the unrequited feelings between Harry and Ginny.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Which is great.
And he says,
hey, no unrequited. There's a point where it gets quite requited, and I want to make sure that's in there.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Melissa.
Requited check. Just saying.
Just saying. We've got to have that in there. Yeah. And then he also says that Ron and Hermione, their relationship, he described it as, quote, delightful and funny and tender and true, end quote. So that's good. I mean, we're going to have one, but then there's going to be, you know.
Yeah, what about that relationship there with our new Lavender here? Wow. Who has yet to be announced. Has she been announced yet? We get a picture of this girl yet?
Nope.
No.
Nothing.
Come on, guys. You're slacking.
Nothing.
You're already filming this.
I know.
Yeah. I had predicted September, but now it looks like it's going to happen in October.
Crazy.
Oh, the announcement, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Slughorn came in September. But still no matter.
They're probably
no
just spacing them out, so there's equal excitement for everybody.
You know, what I'm most excited about is the Gaunts. I know that sounds goofy, but I hope they have that whole sequence in there, you know?
Which parts of the Gaunts?
You know, when he goes back in the memory
Voldemort's
Voldemort's family and all that.
Yeah, that was really cool. Did they put that casting? I mean, did they say if they're going to cast that yet or not?
Nothing.
It's
not...
That makes me nervous because they haven't said anything about that. How else could they do it? How else could we find that stuff out?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it'll be quick like they did with the Marauders. I mean, we all anticipated that, and that was like, you know, like a blink of an eye in Order of the Phoenix, so I don't know.
Oh, well, what else is coming on?
I really hate to bring attention to this, but this is kind of a timely thing. There was a character actor from Scotland, and he plays in a very popular series that airs in UK called Rebus. And he said that for some reason he gave this interview and he started this launch against, J.K. Rowling, I guess. But he says, if we're going to make a fuss about children reading books, do it with Philip Pullman's Dark Materials, not J.K. Rowling. I can't believe idiot educationalists are praising children for turning up at school and reading Harry Potter.
That's
which
just,
I just found.
Yeah. No,
that's
it's
pretty
it's,
crappy.
You know, we have talked about Philip Pullman's books a lot here.
Yeah.
And as much as I recommend them to every man, woman, and child on this earth, I don't think it's a valid comparison. Kids aren't running out and telling each other, oh my gosh, did you read the latest Philip Pullman book, as wonderful books as they are, they're not. It's not like that.
Right.
It doesn't have the same sense of reachable, of identity, of reachable adventure. And if the Philip Pullman books are better by this guy's estimation, then that's all great. But it's not going to have the same effect. So, you know, that's not what's getting kids reading. Harry Potter is what's getting kids reading. And maybe because they read Harry Potter, they will read Philip Pullman. So just shut up, guy. Just shut up.
Well, I was about to anyway because of Harry Potter. Everybody keeps saying, hey, these cool books, Dark Materials, this and that. I'm like, all right, I'll find the materials and see how dark they are, whatever. I'll find it. But
you got them? You're going to read them, John?
Someone said that they're going to give it to me, yeah, so I haven't started it yet.
You better.
That's what their people are saying.
Okay.
And if I hadn't read Harry Potter, I'd be like, heck, you know, whatever. I got a lot of TV to catch up on, but fine. I'll read another book.
So good.
Well, I mean, the point is that they're getting children to read, or not just children, adults, and getting people. And you could talk it be as, you know, it's pedestrian or lowbrow. You can say whatever derogatory thing about it. People are reading, and I think that's an encouraging thing. And I think he's missing the bigger picture, and it's just it's beyond anything. And I didn't understand that attack.
See,
no.
I talked about this briefly with Laura Mallory. So Laura Mallory is this woman who, as most of you know, she has been trying to get the books banned in Georgia, and she's been trying to take them off her shelves. I went down to Georgia, Melissa went down to Georgia, to interview her for a book I'm writing about the Harry Potter fandom, which will be out next November. And we had a long 2-hour chat about everything that's gone on. She's sort of become the face for censorship of Harry Potter in the world. And it's especially poignant this week because this week is Banned Book Week here in the United States. This is a celebration of all books banned and a fight against censorship, the continuing bringing of light to the fight against censorship, sponsored by the American Library Association, which encourages people to read banned books and discourages people from banning books, but are also the entity that often deals with the challenges that gets made against books. So if you want to find out more about Banned Books Week, please head over to ALA.org, find out how you can take part. You can put up an image on your website, or you can donate banned books to libraries, or you can, you know, you can just put up a sticker that says, I read banned books. As J.K. Rowling says on her site, every burned book enlightens the world. And we are recording this before these stats come out, but no doubt that Harry Potter books are on the top of this year's most banned books. If not number one, I can't imagine they wouldn't be number one, number two, or number three. But, you know, what happens is that a parent makes a claim, and that claim gets sent to the school, and when the school needs help, they go, you know, trying to keep this book on their shelf, they go to the American Library Association, who tries to help them by giving them materials and support to try and keep our school's libraries full of the books that, you know, just censorship free. You don't want somebody telling you what to read, do you?
Not generally.
So, except for okay. His Dark Materials, you should go read that right now. The part that we're going to hear from Laura Mallory is actually something that I might turn into a news item and put on Leaky, because it's relevant now and isn't so much of a reveal that I'd be taking something away from the book.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a little bit about her plans and her appeals and what happens now. We don't mean to set her up as like this woman
who... Here she comes.
Yeah, exactly. Here's the face of the person trying to do this bad thing. But she is a very important figure in the fight to either ban or keep Harry Potter on shelves. She has made headlines like you can't believe all over the country, perhaps even all over the world, with her effort to get these books taken off the Georgia library shelf. And she has been unsuccessful, but for some reason, her image and her personage have sparked some sort of fervor. And we had a long talk about her reasonings and about her efforts, and it is for the book that I'm writing about, the Harry Potter phenomenon, which will be out next November. And let's hear it in a couple minutes on from Ms. Laura Mallory.
I'm not sure if you're aware, but it is considered by very many to be a very, very Christian book. Harry essentially... not even essentially, he does. He literally dies to save everyone that he loves and is brought back because of love and then kills the evil guy. So basically, I mean, there is a very specific purgatory implying a very specific heaven, and we do see the evil character in a very specific hell. I mean, it's almost Narnia-esque. It's so Christian, overtly. And it's all fueled on love, 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 love. Harry loved everybody enough to die for them. So then he was granted another chance. He comes back and finally absolutely kills the devil. You see what I mean? And
Voldemort.
What is your reaction to that?
Good question. I was told that would probably happen. A lot of people figured that she would have Harry killed and rise from the dead, make him Jesus-like. I think that only fuels the fire in this case. Light and darkness don't mix. You've got so much darkness in these books. Everybody I've ever talked to admit the books are dark. There's no denying that.
Word dark can mean many different things.
Yeah.
You know, I'll admit they're dark, but I don't think that they're dark in the same way that you think they're dark. You know?
My reaction in one sentence would be I'm not surprised. I just wish people would know my heart. My heart is in the right place. I love kids. I love them. And I think they're precious to God, and He loves them so much that He's willing to go to great lengths to get them the truth. If they read Harry Potter and they're not the least bit interested in the occult, then great. Great. But a lot of them are.
Are you attending a gun right now?
No. It went to the local school board, to the state school board, and to the superior court. And can't go any further without a lawyer. No lawyer really wanted to take this case because it's just too controversial. The media slam, you know, the whole deal.
Did you go to some lawyers?
Yeah, I had a little bit of legal assistance, but I never had a lawyer who actually represent me in a case. I think that the legal issue, like you were asking me before, you know, separation of church and state and a First Amendment case, that would really need to be a federal issue. It would be a federal case, not a local thing. So, you know, I don't know if that'll ever happen or not. But, you know, the only plans at the moment is
God's hand. Yep. And that actually was Laura Mallory. That was not one of our mothers pretending to be Laura Mallory for a funny part.
No, that was That was more of Mallory.
What do we got coming up now?
Oh.
I think it is time. What do you guys think it's time for?
I think it's probably time for our new segment, Bit by Bit, immediately after we hear some of what you guys think about this week's Bit by Bit topic, which is Chapter 1 to Deathly Hallows.
All right. Go.
This is Kimmy Blair, and I am here today to introduce Fan Thoughts, a new segment in Pottercast. Fan Thoughts is a segment where you will get to hear the thoughts of different fans about Deathly Hallows chapter by chapter. This week, a few of our members, Ashley, known as Chocolate is Not for Breakfast, Owen, known as Nimbus XL, Sarah, known as Stamps Gal, Libby, and Julie, known as Amina, are all going to share their thoughts on Chapter 1 with us.
Well, I was really excited about Chapter 1 because I had guessed that it was going to be between Voldemort and Snape. I thought, well, wouldn't it be great if we finally got to see how Snape and Voldemort interact with each other, because even though we've seen each of the characters separately, we never saw them together. So I was really, really excited when I found out. And so that was just, you know, that tickled me pink, just being able to hear how Snape and Voldemort would interact with each other.
My feeling towards the Malfoys changed. Although I was already feeling slightly sympathetic to Draco after Half-Blood Prince, my sympathies extended to the rest of the Malfoy family by the end of this chapter. Being ridiculed and taunted in your own home, despite the fact that you've done nothing wrong, is not a nice experience, and this upset me slightly. They really came across as a family who were in too deep in the movement than they wanted to be.
At first, I thought it was odd that we were introduced to Muggle Studies professor Charity Burbage in the first chapter, only to have her killed off right away. There is no emotional resonance in her death for us. But she was a champion of Muggles, and Voldemort and the Death Eaters hated them. And that was an important theme throughout this book, so her death brought that theme to our attention very early.
My thoughts on the first chapter of Deathly Hallows. You really don't like Snape towards the end of The Half-Blood Prince, but when you hear him speaking to Voldemort and the other Death Eaters about the plan to, you know, get Harry, you hate him that much more.
I think my favorite part of Chapter 1 is when I first listened to it. All I could think of was just how spooky it was. It was just suitably spooky. And it just set the tone for the entire book. I remember thinking, wow, this is going to be one heck of a scary book.
And we're back with our Deathly Hallows Bit by Bit segment, where we take a closer look at a segment of the final installment of the Harry Potter series, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. And this week, ooh, we got a good one. Dark Lord Ascending. I love this chapter.
Well, we're going to do the whole chapter this week. Won't be the whole chapter every week, but this is very much a singular moment in this book. You really can't.
Epic bit.
Yeah.
We have a guest.
Hi, guys.
Oh. He's a very anxious guest.
I need to.
No, it's cool. This week's guest is a very good friend of Pottercast and a good friend to Potter fans all around the world. His name is Frack. And he will be the first
Hello.
Guest addition to Bit by Bit and Phoenix Files.
You have probably seen Frack's work here and there all over Leaky.
Yes.
If you're a Harry and Potter fan and you've seen their image of Wandicorn, Frack is responsible for that image. Frack's an awesome illustrator and a good friend, and we're very happy to have him with us.
Well, firstly, I guess even before the Bit by Bit, so we can figure out who our guest person of the week is, we asked them three important questions with three quick answers. Oh, I'm surprised you, Frack. Your favorite character, your favorite book, and your favorite moment from the Harry Potter series. And that should explain to everybody who you are.
Wow.
Pretty much.
The three defining questions of your life.
My favorite book is the easiest one to answer. I love book 5. I love the character development. I think it's a great book. It's my favorite one so far. I'm still digesting the 7th one, so it might change, but right now it's still the 5th.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite character, it's probably got to be Hermione. I love Hermione. I'd marry her if she was a real person. And then favorite moment. Okay, it's either when Hermione, like, sticks it to Rita Skeeter, or when Hermione kind of gets the best of Umbridge in the forest, and just Hermione's relationship with Umbridge altogether was great because she kind of understood her and it was funny. Or when Dobby died.
Oh, no. What's your favorite part?
What's your favorite moment?
It's my favorite because it's so touching and so poignant.
Wow.
It's just, it's not favorite, like, I'm glad he got it, but kind of like, oh, I'll always remember it. I was like, when it happened. So.
Awesome. Cool.
I guess that's a memorable moment rather than a favorite.
No, it's perfect. That's just what we wanted. And Freck is joining us from California. Correct, Freck?
Yeah, Southern California.
Cool.
What?
Well, let's dive in then. Bit by bit. Let's start with our guest. Talk us through the first few pages here. What happens?
It's their way into the Malfoy Mansion. And don't they... I think they operate outside the gates.
Mm-hmm.
And then the gates talk, which is awesome. And then they saw the peacocks. I'm convinced now that that's what Lucius's Patronus would be. It'd be peacock.
Did you see that Patronus, like, waddling proudly up the Dementor and just sort of kicking it?
And it'll just fluff its feather out, like, its tail. And then, like, this wall of, yeah.
Kill you with its arm.
I'd love to see it with a cane, too. It would be awesome. Can you draw that? That'd be awesome. That'd be great.
Yeah. It's not just a peacock.
Yes,
it's an albino
is.
Peacock. It's a snotty peacock. It's a pure white, fancy schmancy peacock.
No.
It's like, we're a classy peacock. We're pure blood peacock.
Only the best.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly right.
A little tweed vest.
Yeah. This was a cool moment. I remember when we got the darn book and we were reading it on the way to the house, we would read the whole book at. I had to drive the darn car, and somebody was reading this out loud in the back seat. But it was exciting because what was the big question everybody was waiting to find out from Half-Blood Prince is what's going on with Snape? And who do we hear from immediately is this scene with Snape.
Right.
And he's talking about, you know, what's the news? And is it good news? And Snape's like, it's the best news. So we're like, oh, God, Snape. You know, he's bad. Maybe he's bad. What were you guys' impressions of Snape during these first few pages here, during this first chapter?
I thought it was perfect. It was good.
For me, I had pretty much, assumed that he was going to be good from the get-go. Like, I was convinced, like, he's not evil. He can't be evil. His character would be too two-dimensional. He's evil. So I nothing really shook it too much just yet. Later in the book, I was like, oh, crap. But at first, I was like, he just put on his show still. So.
What do you think, Sue?
In my opinion, this was the best starting to one of her books she started because I had been so, we had talked about for so long what was going to happen after and guessed about what was going to happen after he had done the deed and he'd ran away. And I had no idea how she was going to start it. I thought she just set the tone perfect, you know, with that frozen, moonlit lane as she describes it. And then you hear his voice. So I was surprised that he was like not hurt. I thought, well, maybe he's going to be, you know, being tortured or something was going on. And yet here he is, cool, unruffled as ever. And I just was like, whoa, you know, there's Snape.
Well, it's so disorienting because you don't know exactly when it's happening.
Right.
Is it happening directly after book six? Have there been weeks in between? What did we miss?
Yeah.
What, you know, and then of course there's like the big looming question of Snape.
Yes.
But then it sets up that worry because even if he's acting, why does he say something like the best? Couldn't he just say good news or yes, I have news or he says the best. So it's like casting doubt, you know, maybe he is bad. But no, there's that passive thing that he just kept going through that whole chapter was,
it's extraordinary. I can't remember being so gripped by an opening chapter in a long time as this opening chapter. I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, I can't wait to see this on the screen because I really want to see the Malfoy Manor.
Yeah.
Like, in my head, it's so cool looking. I hope it's almost like nauseating elegance.
And she describes it freaking brilliantly, and I have my book in front of me. Let me just read the first real scene that we're introduced is when Snape and Yaxley is the person we've heard from Yaxley, right? This is the first we've seen him. He's a new character in this book.
Well, isn't he the blonde Death Eater from book five?
Is that who they figured out he was? Okay. But they walk up and it said that the drawing room was full of silent people sitting at a long, ornate table. The room's usual furniture had been pushed carelessly up against the walls. Illumination came from a roaring fire beneath the handsome marble mantelpiece surmounted by a gilded mirror. Snape and Yaxley lingered for a moment on the threshold. As their eyes grew accustomed to the lack of light, they were drawn upward to the strangest feature of the scene, an apparently unconscious human figure hanging upside down over the table, revolving slowly as if suspended by an invisible rope and reflected in the mirror in the bare, polished surface of the table below. None of the people seated underneath this singular sight were looking at it, except a pale young man sitting almost directly below it. He seemed unable to prevent himself from glancing upward every minute or so. So, it's a creepy scene that we're looking at here. And I think the usage of this pale young man, which we find out to be Draco, is like our eyes looking at it now.
It's great that you see Draco's apprehension so soon.
Yeah. It's just so creepy, but it's creepy in just a lack of knowing what the heck is going on here. And then the first voice you hear is Voldemort.
Yeah, inside there. Yeah, and you don't, and you know how she describes him, you know, and then you turn and like, here he is at his throne holding court. And then you're in your mind, so you're hearing that. You just imagine his body slowly all the while turning above. I just,
Just a morbid chandelier, you know?
Yes, like, exactly right.
Ooh, that's a great way of putting it, a morbid chandelier. That's creepy.
It's just disgusting. It's like you ask him to, like, you sort of expect them to ask him what he thinks of his decorating skills. Like, it's just disgusting. And it's so indicative of his casual cruelty. And as soon as, were you guys the same? As soon as you saw the word pale, were you like, there's Draco.
Yeah.
Hanging out underneath that woman.
I love how you can, Draco, you just, it's great. It shows his apprehension that kind of fluctuates throughout the whole story. He can't even, like, look at her long. He just kind of flickers up and looks down. You know, if he was – this was Draco, like, 4 years ago, and he's all, like, little Mr. wannabe Death Eater, you know, he'd be, like, all cocky about, like, yeah, we got to, you know, got a lady trapped, whatever. But,
you know, I think she did a really good job, too, in, like, setting the tension. That there's that way of, you know, like you said, the uncertainty. You didn't – like you described Draco, you didn't know – and yet you had to know that these people were feeling this kind of like, there's a body hanging above their heads, you know?
Yeah.
And it could be him. And then the next page, though, John, we hear about your boy, Talish.
Talish makes his first of many appearances.
Talish is everywhere
in this book.
Let's just remind everybody what's happening in this scene. They're discussing how to get at Harry Potter. So the first thing we're finding out is that now it is complete open war, and pretty much the second Harry Potter emerges from his cocoon of protective spells, he's going to be grabbed. So now we know exactly at what, not like book six where they were in this weird holding pattern, you know?
Yeah.
He was still sort of on the fly, kind of. It wasn't so much that Harry couldn't move. Now, with Dumbledore gone, that's it. It's on. You know?
Yeah. Well, I thought two things were particularly interesting here, reading it the second time through, how Yaxley, the character of Yaxley, seems to be in a similar role for Voldemort as Snape. I mean, they came together, they both came with information. Like, that's sort of their purpose, really, is gathering information, and it's almost like they're competing against each other here for Voldemort's favor and for usefulness. And it was really interesting dialogue to read this Snape Voldemort Yaxley conversation, because it was like Snape is like amused and sitting here trying to watch Yaxley, you know, one up Snape, and Snape's like, he knows he's got the better information, and all along knowing the other side, the Snape on top of it. That's so interesting.
What do you think Snape meant when he said the source that we discussed? He thought it was Mundungus? Like, who does Voldemort think that Snape was speaking to?
I think it was dung. I think you're right, Melissa.
Well, that would make sense, because we can't know that it was dung at that point yet, or else that whole thing doesn't work.
Yeah.
But if it's as easy as confunding somebody to get that information, how come none of these other idiot Death Eaters have thought to confund dung?
I know.
And get, you know?
Well, do they all know that dung is with the Order?
Order member?
Would Snape be the only one that would know something like that?
Possibly.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think it's, the battle lines are pretty, I mean, I hate to say clearly established, but I think that if we're in a sense of open warfare at this point, that, I mean, it's going to be pretty clear that, I mean, that Dung probably, I mean, we all know that he's a no-good, dirt and rotty thief, but it was probably well known that he was hung around Dumbledore for protection.
That's
so
true.
Well, it is true. Well, and the other thing I thought was interesting here was that they sort of established some limitations on the Death Eaters and Voldemort's ability, which I thought was important, because it made them feel more real as characters and as an organization, where they can't just jump in and take Harry whenever they want. that Dumbledore's protection and all that still trumped their abilities, and that they were even nervous about the Ministry's abilities to protect them. They're like, this is our chance, because once they get to the other protections, we won't be able to touch them. So we know that they're dangerous, and we know that they're a big threat, but it's interesting to know that they're not completely all-powerful, that there is something still somewhat equal opposing them. And it was real interesting to have that made clear right up front.
Well, you know what I would like to talk about, just one quick thing, is we're in this beautiful, opulent manor, this beautiful, we've seen flamboyant peacocks, and then we see our first appearance of Lucius Malfoy, who is less than flamboyant at this point. He's described as his skin appeared yellowish and waxy, and his eyes were sunken and shadowed. I just thought that was quite a dichotomy.
I could have sworn he had his soul sucked out of the Dementors. I said that before, but I swear to God, I could have sworn he got attacked at Azkaban, and he was just a shell of a person, and that's what he looked like.
We didn't see anybody get their soul sucked out. The whole series. We didn't see anybody in the whole series to get their soul sucked out.
How disappointing.
Well, we saw Barty Crouch did, but we don't see him after it happens, you know?
Yeah.
How disappointing. It almost happened to Harry about 16 times in this book.
No. Yeah.
Oh, no. It's like, oh, Dementors, Doc. Oh, Dementors, Doc.
Yeah.
I remember they went Dementors.
Well, it's because they didn't want to actually suck out the Horcrux. You know?
Like,
that's why.
I thought that was the purpose of the Dementors.
That, me too. That's the only literary purpose they can have in the story, right?
Yeah.
Totally.
True. Well, other than Dementors, we introduced to a couple new characters now, the thick-knees guy, who was he at the ministry? What was his position?
Minister.
He's the scrimshaw guy.
Yeah, later on. Yeah, but he's the head of magical law enforcement.
He was imperious or confounded?
Imperious. And the whole concept of imperious thing is real interesting, because if you imperious somebody, can the connection continue from, like, first of all, from far away? You don't have to keep it up all the time. So, like, the person who said he imperiused him can just at any time think, no, do my washing. And the guy would show up and do his laundry, like.
I think it would have to be, like, range at some point. It'd be like, you imperious somebody, and, like, I imperious you. You need to act like yourself while I'm away. And then when you come back, you can tell him to do something else, or something like that.
How close would a Death Eater be able to get to that guy for?
I have no idea.
To be of you.
Because remember,
you know?
When Harry did it, that's the first time we actually felt how it was to do it. Like, Harry felt that he was a part of that person. So to do it to, like, multiple people and all from different distances, I would think it has to be something that would be, you have to be in a limited adjacency to the person imperious. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like a Mary, it's like a puppet. So you need to be close enough to pull the strings. How I always saw it.
I just don't know how this Death Eater who got close enough can do it in all the ways they need him to do it. Always be close enough to the guy, because if you have to renew the spell, I don't think you have to renew the spell then, right? You always connect. It's like you're always connected, and it lies dormant, and then you have to renew it little bit.
Or just have to kind of get back on the bike type of thing.
Get back on the bike.
Well, I don't understand.
Do some crimes.
I don't, like, a Confundus charm, how do they differ? Like, a Confundus charm is what? I thought Confundus was just messing up with their memory. It's like you hypnotize them.
I thought Confundus was like the Jedi mind tricks. Yeah.
That's what it seems like.
Okay.
It's like,
that's
is how you got here.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
That's a great way of putting
it. Pretty good.
Because
it's not as unforgivable.
Because Hermione confunded her parents or modified the memory?
She modified the memories.
Then I don't get when she's, I know this is off topic, but when she's in the cafe and she's like, I don't, never done it, but I know the theory, and she did it.
Well, Joe was asked that, I think. I think Joe was asked that, and she said it was a different thing. It's like modifying memory and doing obliviate is different.
Oh.
Wiping a memory.
I see. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. But I would think changing it would be harder because to keep it somewhat intact.
Right.
Anyway, this is like a whole canon conundrum on memory modification, sorry.
Okay, well, the last thing we should talk about in this chapter is that we have Charity Burbage, who doesn't really serve anything else in the story except to demonstrate the Nazi-esque 1940s kind of
martyrdom
censorship thing that's happening with Voldemort's power.
She wrote an article
about the equality for the half bloods, pure or mud bloods, muggle born people, etc. And they said, "Screw you, we're knocking you out." And they did it for fun. They fed the darn snake.
Yeah.
Oh, crazy. They fed it to the snake.
I went to a lecture the other day, and the guy, he was talking about Harry Potter, and he said that he made an interesting parallel because charity means love, and in the beginning of the book, Voldemort destroyed love, but at the end of the book, love is what destroyed Voldemort. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
That's very cool. I like that.
Yeah, I thought it was,
exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking that too because of her name. You know, charity and hope and care about others. And, you know, I mean, so she was a perfect name for the teacher who taught about muggles and embracing it. Yet here he was preaching about intolerance.
She'd be a Hufflepuff.
And hatred. And
she's a total Hufflepuff. Yeah, she's a total Hufflepuff.
Yes, I bet she was.
Charity verbiage. Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Pretty Gryffindor of her to write that article.
Hufflepuffs are bold as well, you know. Different
but, hey, all Hufflepuffs aren't our wimps, but, What do you think, though, I mean, about her actual death? The fact that she was twirling about, she was alive, and she's pleading with Snape.
Yeah.
Oh,
it just shows what Snape had to go through and what, just how much harder his job was, looking a colleague in the eye and, like, without giving her any hope or anything, just like, sorry, you're done. I'm evil.
It's just amazing how much stuff she threw into this first chapter. How much, character development and explanation and everything else. I mean, the moments with Snape, knowing after reading this book once, going back and getting into his head and what he must have been thinking throughout all this. It's amazing.
Yeah, that'd be really cool to have Snape's commentary on the book. You're watching a movie.
I was really scared right here.
Like, I really hated killing her.
A really crappy Snape voice.
Elvis.
Tonight's role of Snape will be played by Elvis. Well, there's one other thing I wanted to.
Well, the charity really does sort of represent a Lily Potter to him. Somebody muggle born, somebody who would defend muggle born, somebody who knew how to knew her life would be in danger. But a muggle born, so you can imagine what it was like looking up at this person who, in a different sequence of events, might have been Lily. You know,
That's true. I still want to know Lily and James' jobs, but whatever.
Do you think that Draco actually had that class?
Probably.
No, I don't
know. Oh, no.
Would.
You have to choose it?
No,
he wouldn't.
He
has to choose it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yet, there was a distinct mention of him repeatedly looking up at her, just being...
Sure.
Well, you think we see Draco...
I think it's just the reality of being a Death Eater kind of settling even more. Like, he had this ephemeral, romantic view of what a Death Eater is. Like, we're prestigious, we're powerful, we don't care. But actually seeing what they do and what they have to... I think it's just kind of him, just digesting how evil they really are. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, because trying to kill Dumbledore wasn't a big enough deal.
Well, he didn't do a very good job.
No, he really did not.
Okay. Well, dang, guys. That was pretty... So much in this chapter.
That was a
big... Next time we get to talk about the Seven Potters and the the Hedwig who's not dead.
Probably.
Hedwig.
Probably we'll have to get through the Dursleys and stuff first.
Oh, my God. The Dursleys.
Oh, right. All right, well, let's deal with the Dursleys next week.
Yeah, Dursley will be next week. And no, we didn't forget that Dumbledore and Bellatrix and the Malfoys all get made fun of from Voldemort.
No, we didn't.
Which was hilarious. I mean, it does serve a brilliant point because it shows that, Bellatrix may be one of his closest and may even flirt with Voldemort. Voldemort doesn't care. Voldemort will make fun of her right to her face. Voldemort doesn't love anybody.
Yeah. Voldemort.
And
he's
doesn't...
the old teaser. He doesn't care.
All right, well, how about we go talk about the movie now, and Frack will be with us for that as well.
Yeah.
We have had two changes in staffing this year. We are very pleased to welcome back Professor Grubbly Plank, who will be taking Care of Magical Creatures lessons. We are also delighted to introduce Professor Umbridge, our new Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher.
Welcome back, everybody. This is guest host of the week, Frack. We are talking about the Phoenix Files with the trio.
Hello.
Hey, Frack.
Here we are.
Hey, guys.
Good work.
Welcome
nice
back.
Work, Frack.
Missed you.
It's good work. Okay.
Well, yeah.
Phoenix Files.
You get
favorite, favorite segment in the show.
What's
about
the hem? Oh, Sue's being all...
Phoenix.
So what are we... Sue, what are we talking about this week, Frank?
Oh.
Her pinkness, her badness, her badness, and the cat lady. Herself.
The cat lady. Now, that would be a whole different
thing. Oh, I guess so.
Halle Berry.
I love the little brooch. I want that kitten brooch.
I sort of, I always wished it was animated. I want, right?
Me too. I wanted that brooch to be the one that, you know, the cat that left and they went into the fireplace to
help? Yeah, she's
I wanted
spy
that
cat.
The cat
she's
to be on a brooch. Spying. Like, he told her. It was. Yeah.
Oh, it was.
Snobby cat.
Yeah.
Cute,
was that in the book?
No, but she does know that.
They put secrecy dispensing spells
didn't
on
didn't he remind you of the cat from Austin Powers movies? I did.
Well, we are not.
They should have had a little cameo.
Yeah. That's where he went.
Before she was frozen.
That's where he went after the second movie. Mini-Me outdid him. So he's like,
exactly.
He fired his agent. His career went downhill, and he ended up on a plane.
Exactly right.
No. Aww. Threw all of the pair back.
All right, I'm sorry. Wrong series of movies, sorry. The rest.
Umbridge would be awesome with a Mr. Bigglesworth or Wigglesworth, whatever it is. Could you imagine her with that freaky, skinless, or hairless cat in her arms the whole time?
It's a gross cat.
It's not cute enough for her. It, she
That's
did
a
it
gross
like a little
cat.
Key from the vest.
Pink.
Cat brooch on it.
Okay, here we go. Phoenix Files, we are talking about when we get introduced to Umbridge at the Great Hall Feast. Everybody's sitting at Dumbledore's doing
our reactions and the kids' reactions.
The kids' reactions are just classic. The kids meeting the whole hall.
Well, then we see Umbridge, or I mean Trelawney this time too, right? She's the shower, and
she's eating.
Right, and I thought that was a little strange, but...
Well, we know that that's going to be a deleted scene, of course,
right,
now.
But
the whole 4 minutes of her eating, I guess.
Yeah.
It's so random, but you have to think that if you're David Yates, you're like, oh, my gosh.
I'm looking forward to that.
I've got Emma Thompson here. Let's just
that
do
must
something.
That must be hilarious.
You know?
It's like us. Like, when we include random
She's
ass
brilliant.
Things into the show where, like, they don't really on topic to anything. They're not conducive to the conversation, but they're hilarious, so we have to keep them in.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Perfect, right. Perfect timing, friend.
That was awesome.
Why do we do it? Because you can't.
You know, it was so awesome on that scene, though. I mean, there's Dumbledore. It was pretty good in the book. I mean, just that kind of part matched. And then there was Dumbledore doing his little thing, and then you hear, you know, and she puts her little hands down, and then she goes, you know, and she gets that smile, and then she... Oh, did you not just get the chills?
Yeah.
She started speaking at the end, and she just gives that... That little laugh? Oh, like nails, like on the chalkboard, just like, oh my goodness.
Oh God.
It's that typical, that official or teacher who's saying things without using like the empirical evidence in front of them. Like, I'm so glad to see your happy faces smiling up at me, and you see a shot of the kids and they're all look like they want to kill her.
Yeah.
Blank. What?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I could not get over that. And didn't they show like the Weasley or the Fred and George out there or somebody there was a good
They have a line. They have a line something about like
that's
likely.
I'm sure we'll all be the best of friends.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
And then Fred dies.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, not yet. Sorry, Fred.
Oh. Way to bum out everybody. Here we have this light, funny thing, and then here you go. Party Cooper John. Way to go.
I suck.
Kill the mood.
No, Hedwig's first.
Who flies in and coughs on camera.
Anyway, I'm sick.
Did we see Grubbly Plank? Was your buddy Grubbly Plank in there?
Plank is up there. Plank is an introduction. He's there and they're like, thanks, Grubbly Plank, stepping in for magical creatures, and everybody claps.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. Yeah. But do you guys think it came across as effective that no one ever interrupts Dumbledore, and yet this woman gets up? Because, like, I think Joe makes a point to really narrate that out. Like, everybody looks stunned, and McGonagall's lips were pierced into her mouth and everything else like they always are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Frank?
I think they did a good job because Dumbledore's kind of like, what's going on? You know?
I thought that they did a good job kind of establishing. I mean, just her delivery and everything. And then Hermione does kind of say something, right, about the ministry she's taking over or like Ron.
What does that mean? Or something stupid. But
It was pretty close to what she says in the book, too. It was, you know, progress for the sake of progress will not be encouraged.
Must be prohibited.
To, you know, prune practices.
Prune which practices.
Not be happening or whatever.
All peas.
Yeah. And I forget what the other one was. But, yeah, pretty much she's interfering and no one seems to get it but Hermione.
Yeah.
Which, of course. I mean, come on, guys. How dim are you? You should have had at least some kind of idea what she was talking about. But it's odd that Dumbledore's just kind of like, okay, whatever. He claps and, like, sit down.
Yeah.
We'll see about that.
Well, he does call it illuminating.
Yeah. Which,
that is true. You know.
Yeah, kind of like illuminating.
Frank, I'm going to ask you this. I mean, because we've talked, three of us obviously have talked about the movie a lot, but what do you think? I mean, do you like the way the setting is? Do you like the way that they've cast it? Does it kind of match your head and your vision inside of what you thought the Hogwarts would look like?
The movie in general?
Or no, just like say that scene in the Great Hall. I mean, I always look forward to them going into the Great Hall, you know?
Yeah, like the Great Hall was great. Umbridge, I think she was spot on. She wasn't as, like, ugly as the book said, but you know, but that's irrelevant to me because the character was there. You know, the appearances, aesthetics is secondary as long as the character's there, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I love that scene. The only scenes, like, in the movie, I love the whole movie except for I don't like Moody. I don't like the actor, but that's just me being stupid. And I didn't like Grimald Place's exterior. Interior was perfect. Exterior was
perfect. Yeah.
But everything else of that movie was spot on. And that scene was brilliant. I love all the students.
I think that would have been too distracting if she was, you know, super, super ugly.
Yeah, like, because she had the gaudy outfit, she had the, you know, the pink, all that stuff. So you got the vibe that she was like, you know, like, I do not want to sit down and have tea with her.
Totally.
Especially with her 18 scoops of sugar.
All this sugar.
This sugar?
Yeah.
Would you like some tea with your sugar?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's pretty much how I drink my tea out there. When we were up there staying with your friends most in London, tea every other hour or so. But I have to put sugar in it or it's just like, you know, messed up milk otherwise.
They do not drink tea every hour or so. Well, all of England's going to be emailing you, John.
I don't know.
I was like, do they really do that?
I also, you do put milk in it, right? Or is it cream?
Milk. Well, same thing.
I forget which one that Matt Lewis abolished us on.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, he did give us a... Yeah.
No, cream. We didn't have cream.
Cream
was very angry, but it's not in the opening anymore.
I think there's something like that.
Oh, we did see Neville in the scene, too, didn't we? When we saw him in the last scene when he was in the carriage with Luna. What do you think about his new hairstyle there?
Oh, God. We fell to that.
I think it's like he's trying to be cool, but he's just not quite there yet.
Yeah.
So, it reminds me of me when I was in high school. He was just in my hair. I would forget to comb the back of my head because I didn't even know. I wasn't the coolest kid there. So, I have a soft spot for now.
No, it's just, it's all bringing him down, 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 so that in book 7, he's the ultimate badass. He's he's the Neville.
The Neville.
The Neville.
That's right.
Like that, the Neville.
Le Neville.
The Neville.
The Neville.
Umbridge, the definitive answer on her.
Umbridge
she was
awesome. And
I guess. Awesome,
when
awesomely
I
bad.
LA, I see her in line at Pink's because she likes everything pink. So she gets her hot dogs at Pink's.
But I'm fine.
She works there after she got fired from
the
defense job.
Yeah.
Yeah, she...
Well, she's definitely the one that came up with the Harry Potter dog there. The Harry Potter dog
gross.
Doesn't really
and we have so many better ideas for that.
I know. We can
Harry
do a different
Potter
house,
dog
mustard, and ketchup in stripes. Well, that's Gryffindor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dolores Umbridge hot dog vendor. I love that image.
I love it.
It's awesome.
I think that should be her punishment. She gets tried in prison after book 7, so I think that she should have to
with
go
no
over
magic.
At Pink's.
No magic.
She likes Pink's.
With no magic.
With what?
With all those
no
muggles.
Magic.
All those muggles around every day.
Oh, dear. Yes.
Awesome.
I'm hungry.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. I knew that would happen.
Well, what's on the Phoenix Files tab for next week, guys? What comes next?
What happens right after
this? Harry and three other people up to the Gryffindor common room, and we start to see how his friends and housemates are starting to give him crap already about the newspapers from the summer previous, and how people don't believe him about Voldemort, and how a certain redheaded friend sticks up for him, and then gets his face ripped off, back up in the bedroom, in an unfun way.
Okay.
And then I have to just say that the newspapers throughout the movie, a graphic designer speaking, I loved it. It was they were brilliant.
Oh yeah.
The typography and all, it was just that made the movie for me. I was like, oh, I want one of the newspapers. That made it, but. Like, I really loved it, and I loved how they did this title sequence that way. It was just...
Yeah. I've been trying to copy that myself,
it's great.
I'm not as good at typography. I'm not good at the typography that.
You have such freedom, because you can just go in any direction in that universe, so it was like, So I had to expound on that, just because I'm a nerd and I like fonts. It's like, oh, look at all of them.
Yeah.
So, sorry.
Look at all of them.
All right. Well, I guess we have to thank Mr. Frack.
Thank you for having me.
Did an awesome job.
Yay.
And if you're any of you guys out there interested in doing what Frack just did here for us this week, you know how to find us by now, hopefully, thepottercast.com. And more details at the end of the show how to do that.
It's pretty awesome.
All right, thank you, Frack.
Thanks, Frack. We'll see you soon.
Thank you, guys. I really had a blast.
Welcome to Scooby 5, the 5-minute podcast of the Leaky Cauldron's premiere, if invisible, essay project. I'm Erin, or Calcius.
And I'm Laura, or Music House. You know, Erin, it does feel like we, Scribulous, are hiding under a giant invisibility cloak.
Yeah, I totally see what you're saying, Laura. We have the makings of a new website now and are getting things together for a new issue coming very soon, but no one can see us yet, can they?
No, but we really are still here.
Well, we do have a few things to talk about today. Like, for example, we have picked the call topics for the next few months.
That's right, and we are very excited about them. The October issue will still be the previously posted Deathly Hallows reviews, as well as other things, and is coming soon.
Yes, this coming issue is likely to be smaller than normal, so we really need all of you listeners to get your essays together and send them to Scribulous at the-leaky-cauldron.org.
My Slytherin side has to speak out here, Erin. Scribulous isn't just any online journal. We have high standards for acceptance. We only take the best, most power-hungry, and motivated essays.
Wah-ha-ha-ha.
We'd like to remind you that if you have your essay beta read by a friend, it will likely be better received by our staff.
Or perhaps you should beta and gamma read your essay yourself and then have a friend delta read it.
That too.
As many of you know, we post call topics for each month. You may submit on any Harry Potter-related topic at any time, but the call topics are to get the creative juices flowing. For example, did you feel as though in Deathly Hallows some of the characters appeared differently than they had before?
Yeah, Lupin, the deadbeat dad, Neville, the snake slayer, Molly, not my daughter, you bitch, Percy, one joke is a start, Harry doubting his faith, and Snape, you could insert anything you wish here.
Yeah, there are views coming in that range from Return of the Half-Blood King to Severus Lecter, even Severus Rasputin, maybe just Dr. Evil, perhaps. Just when we think we've heard it all, someone comes up with another angle on that guy.
But wait, Erin, you interrupted before I could get into Draco Malfoy. I'd love to do him myself.
Now, Laura, I know you'd like to do Draco, but this is about Scribulous essays, not your love life.
Well, he's just so handsome. But I meant to point out that the whole Malfoy family went through a transformation in Deathly Hallows.
Yeah, they did. So, wow, there are so many characters to choose from for our November call.
Changing concepts of characters, and we'll need that by October 15th to get it in our November issue.
Oh, but wait, Laura, I just realized that you didn't mention the most significant and controversial change we saw in Deathly Hallows.
I didn't?
No, you forgot Albus, Percival, Wulfric, Brian, Dumbledore.
Well, that's our December call, send essays on him in by November 1st. We already have one or two or even three in the works, don't we, Erin?
Yeah, we do. Dumbledore totally blew my mind in Deathly Hallows. I have three essays of him of my own brewing on him.
Well, you go for it then. But wait, don't weigh yourself out or you'll have to take a whole month of December off and we need you here on staff.
Well, thanks for saying that, Laura, but actually we are taking December off, so Woo! It works out. And the rest of you out there will have Christmas break to write your essays due January 2nd on the mechanics and meaning of magic.
Oh, now that's a topic I am totally excited about. There must be some science behind transfiguring one object into another, right? And we learned a lot about wand lore from Deathly Hallows, but there's so much more to explore there.
Oh, me too. And that will bring us through to our March issue, due February 1st. Our call topic that month is alchemy, mythology, folklore, and symbolism. That covers a broad spectrum of deep issues. I hope some of those obscurest folk, forum folks, are just itching to get their wisdom out there.
Yes. And then there is my favorite issue of the year, April.
Ooh, the spoof issue.
Our topic idea for this one is really fun. Any books, magazines, or newspapers from Harry Potter are fair game for a spoof article. The Quibbler would be an obvious candidate. But think of all the other stuff. Witch Weekly, Hogwarts of History, Tales of Beedle the Bard, textbooks galore on potions, herbology, divination.
Ooh, and think of all the books by Lockhart. Break with a Banshee, Gadding with Ghouls, Gilderoy Lockhart's Guide to Household Pests, Holiday with Hags, Magical Me, his autobiography, Travel with Trolls, Voyages with Vampires, Wandering with Werewolves,
Ow!
Year with the Yeti.
You can't possibly have all of those books memorized, Erin.
Well, Laura, I kind of fancy him.
Gosh. Anyway, there is a lot to choose from, so start working on your spoof essays now. That is by far our best issue.
Indeed. So we hope to get many, many submittals sent to scribulous@theleakycauldron.org. And we will be reviewing them with that Slytherin eye that Laura mentioned and contacting you. But don't worry, we'll make sure the people who contact you are much more like Gryffindor or Hufflepuff than Slytherin. Anyway,
you know.
Until next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Which banned book are you guys going to read this week? Actually, John, if you read the His Dark Materials books, those have been banned in places. Those are hotly contested books.
What are they about, anyway?
It is basically the largest fight you can possibly imagine. It's heaven and earth and parallel worlds versus God and the devil. It is the biggest... the actual battle within it is bigger than Harry Potter.
So they don't even bother to, like, set up, like, characters like God and the devil, like
no,
Harry,
you don't
Voldemort.
See the devil, but you do see God.
For real?
Yeah, for real. And angels and the church and you're in this world where people carry their souls on the outsides of their bodies.
Is it played by Alanis Morissette?
No, John. Not played by Alanis Morissette, nor Alan Rickman, though I wouldn't mind a little Alan Rickman in the movie.
That'd be great. LOL.
No, they carry their souls on the outside of their bodies, and until you've reached maturity, it changes shape to match your mood, and then it sort of settles. It's called a demon, and it settles on a shape that
well,
never
represents
you.
Don't ruin it for me.
It's like a Patronus, not really though.
That's creepy. Maybe I'll read it this week.
No, it's awesome.
Oh boy. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed our new canon segment. Just to remind everybody, this is not replacing Canon Conundrums. This will be in addition to Canon Conundrums. This one ran a little long this week because we're just kind of getting used to how to do it and everything. But we will pack both segments into each and every show when it is possible to do the recording for each and every segment. And we shouldn't push the show any longer than normal either, so you should be able to fit it all into your CDs if any of you are still doing that and haven't joined the iPod revolution. Yeah, if you want to be a guest host like Frack was this week, or you want to submit a fan thought like you heard prior to the Bit by Bit segment, you can do all of that stuff. First, by contacting us through Pottercast.com, and you can email us at staff@pottercast.com like that, or you can leave us voicemails as the usual ways from the Skype name Pottercast and all of our phone numbers that you can find on Pottercast.com too, which you'll probably hear again once we repeat them to you as this show ends today.
Cool.
Okay. What you doing this week, Sue?
What book am I doing this week? I'm actually, my son is learning about
I'm reading him or introducing him to Huckleberry Finn. So, and that's one of those challenges. So I thought, hey,
nice.
That would be a good one. So I'm going to hang out with Huck. And I'm not going to do the can-can this week, although, come on, can we just say this one more time? That was so hysterical. But the reason we thought it was funny is because Slughorn, Jim Brombent, in Moulin Rouge, and everyone's like, oh, you guys took that. No, that we know the Harry Potter parodies of Moulin Rouge have been around for years and years, but just when they
Wait, what? Harry?
Yes.
That's the first time
I heard. Oh, no, I got a whole bunch of things. Oh, you guys are ripping off the... I'm like, no, dudes. We know.
Oh, for the love of God, if I hear one more nonsense rip-off clam, I'm going to kick somebody.
I know, and I'm like, hello.
You guys think
funny.
I'm this all-knowing person here.
No, but Sue, what's this Moulin Rouge Harry... What?
Oh, there's a whole slew of parodies on YouTube of Harry Potter and the Moulin Rouge tale about how, you know, Hermione and Harry and Ginny are the unrequited love and the whole thing, and this came out years ago, and I got all these things. Oh, you guys took that can-can from this.
They've done that for, like, every movie.
And somebody thought that that using the Slughorn clip, because it's a funny clip of this actor playing Slughorn, was doing the same thing as that?
Yes. And I'm like,
oh, man.
I'm like, I know, I just have
stuff.
To say something. Like, this is just ridiculous. No.
No, guys.
It's
no.
just funny.
So I do want to go watch those videos now.
Oh, they're good.
Right now,
they're
me?
Good. But, I mean, just the image of Slughorn dancing, I thought was doing the can-can was kind of amusing to me. I don't know.
There it is. Harry Potter and the Tale of the Moulin Rouge. Ooh, I'm going to go watch
it
now.
It's good. But you can still can-can-can! Woohoo! I like that. But.
Okay.
All right, let's can our butts out of here, guys.
Yeah, I'm canning out of here.
Are we canning, or are we going to twiddling dials, too?
Oh, yeah. Guys,
what, that's right.
Awesome ears. Those of you who heard the password last week, we made it extra special protected, so if you heard it last week,
yeah,
we
played it in reverse, and very quietly, somewhere in the middle of Scrippy 5.
But look, you're listening this week, so clearly you got it. On that note...
Keep twiddling those dials.
The next password will be Slughorn.
Keep each other safe. Keep faith.
Night.
We've missed it.
W3.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
This week's podcast was produced by the Podcast Trio and Steve Bonnet. The show was edited by Steed, Hildy, Samantha, and Liz. Thanks to Steve Vanderart for joining us for Canon Conclusions. Thanks to our Scooby 5 team, Aaron and Nina, and thanks, as always, to our awesome transcription elves for transcribing this and all our other episodes on Pottercast.com. For more information about the show and how to contact us and be a part of future episodes, visit Pottercast.com.